Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Welcome to Plugged In, a post-media podcast taking you down Canada's electric vehicle highway. I'm your host, Andrew McCready. To be honest, I had no idea back in October 2019 when I did that first episode that 5 years later, the Plugged In podcast would still be going strong. I did, however, suspect the electric vehicle revolution would only grow, and it certainly has. Just over 50,000 new EVs were bought by Canadians back in 2019, and last year that number more than tripled. One in every five new vehicles sold in my home province of British Columbia last year was an all-electric vehicle. Integral to that EV adoption has been the expansion of the public charging network across the country. In 2019, there were just over 10,000 public places to plug in your EV. Today, there are over 25,000. And that's still not nearly enough. My guest today works for a Canadian company that has played a big role in helping to establish a public charging network, not just in this country, but across North America. Nathan Yang is Vice President and Chief Product Officer for Flow, a Quebec-based company that has installed over 100,000 public, private, and residential chargers since its founding in 2019. It boasts nearly 500,000 members and provides over 1 million charges per month. Yang leads all product innovation activities of the company, including hardware and software. A Montreal native, he holds a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering from McGill University. Thanks very much for taking the time to join us today, Nathan.
You're welcome, and I'm excited to be here, Andrew.
Yeah, great to have you. I'm a longtime Flow charger user, public stations, so really looking forward to this talk. But as I do with all my first-time guests, I'd like to know what was the first electrical vehicle you drove and your impressions of it at the time.
Yes, the first one I drove was an Audi e-tron.
Okay.
It was named the Q8. And my impression at that time was that is the future.
Right. That's a pretty impressive vehicle to drive. That must have been pretty quick.
It was pretty quick. And, you know, you hear a lot about how EVs are so much different than gas vehicles. But, of course, the way that Audi built it, it mimicked a traditional internal combustion engine car. So that was really impressive.
Were you in the electric vehicle space at the time, the charging space, or was this before that?
I was not. I was in the fleet management software space. I knew that EVs were growing in adoption. I knew more models of EVs were being offered, and I test drove that vehicle, and it was fantastic. Of course, I've since joined Flow. That was about 3 years ago, and here I am now.
Would you have thought when you drove this, as you said, it was the future? Did you think that you'd be part of it, or did you just think if you stayed in the automotive industry, it was a fait accompli that you would have been around electric vehicles?
I'm a design technology product guy, so I tend to want to try new things. I like to be the early adopter. I'm sitting next to my Vision Pro here, which I know is not a good conversation. You know, I try to try different things to play around with it, learn about it, explore what a future could be. And that vehicle really, changed my perspective. Of course, at that point, I drove a Tesla. I still drive a Tesla. We're about to get another electric vehicle as a family. So we're very much bought into the vehicle electrification.
Excellent. Excellent. So as I mentioned at the top, you are the chief product officer with Flow. Before we talk about Flow, I'd like to get some of your impressions of the overall public charging network in Canada and North America. I mean, Flow is across North America. Yep. We're more specific to Canada. So, I mean, I don't know if this is fair, but rating it on a scale of 1 to 10, what would you give it and why?
Good question. I think, you know, I'll give a score and I'll, and like you said, you asked the why, maybe a 7.
Okay.
And the reason why I gave a 7, because I experienced, driving an EV in Norway. And of course I live currently in Austin, Texas, and I also experienced driving an EV in Texas. And I think those two might be close to the two extremes, maybe not the 1 and the 10, but maybe a, let's say a 9 and a 5. Canada by far is doing a really good job compared to many states in the United States. When I rent an electric vehicle in Canada, when I travel for business or even when I'm with my family, I have no hesitation to ask for an EV. I'm confident they'll find level 2 charging, DC charging, and you know, at destination, at my hotel, or at a retail location that might be going to buy something. So I feel pretty comfortable. But even living in Texas, for example, when I go to a trade show, I'm in Austin, so when I drive to Houston or San Antonio or Dallas, it's almost guaranteed that the hotel will not have a charger or the convention center will not have a charger. And so that's pretty nerve-wracking. Now, industry-wide, we still have reliability challenges, of course, and availability could be even better in Canada. So that's why I scored it a 7.
You know, just talking about Texas as an aside here, it kind of amazes me. And I think anyone who's listening who doesn't know it, that Texas leads all states in renewable energy production. Yes. I mean, that's fantastic. I mean, good for them, an oil producing state, to have done that, I think, is very forward thinking. Why hasn't that trickled down to the charging network or to the EV culture?
That's a good question. I asked myself that question too. I think there's familiarity. Texas is a very personal passenger vehicle centric type society with culture. It's very hard, for example, to move around in Dallas and Houston and Austin, San Antonio without a vehicle. They typically drive maybe longer distances than maybe other cities. Texas is pretty big as a state.
In a truck culture too.
In a truck culture, exactly. That's exactly what I was going to mention. And until the Ford F-150 was announced, or the Hummer EV, or even the Cadillac Escalade EV was announced, there was not really any option for a lot of the Texans that prefer larger vehicles, for example.
So getting back to Canada, according to Natural Resources Canada, there are currently roughly about 12,000 public chargers from coast to coast to coast. Mm-hmm. The federal government's goal is 50,000 public chargers, and that's obviously a ways to go. How are we going to get there? Is it going to be a combination of public charging networks like Flow and private, you know, gas stations like Petro-Canada? How do you see that breaking down? How are we going to get there?
I think it's going to be mixed. I don't think we can rely on a single network, a single provider to provide all the charging solution. And I think it's going to be how simple can we make the experience for the EV driver while she or he may charge at a full public charger for part of the a week, may charge at home for another part, or may charge at a workplace. And maybe even charge during a business trip somewhere else when transiting between cities using a DC fast charger. That's why things like roaming is really important, right? Many don't recall or realize, but you know, the EV charging network is very similar to the early days of the cell phone or the mobile phone networks. Different companies will build their own networks, but they weren't interoperable, and that's when roaming
happened.
If for those old enough to remember that,
where you'd have blank spots, right? You'd lose service.
Yeah, you have blank spots, and then when you roam, you activate roaming, and you have to pay a roaming fee,
right,
to be able to use it. And EV charging, unfortunately, in some areas, are like that.
That's a great analogy. I've never heard that, but you're bang on with that. That's so true. So
yeah.
So where are we? Are we still in the early days of roaming for EVs, or is it starting to knit together more?
We are, but we also learn from that experience. So we in Europe, there are roaming hubs, and so you pay a fee in order to roam through a roaming hub. And so,
how does that work? Explain that. How does that work?
So, for example, if you have a network A's mobile app, I'll use A as just a generic name.
Yeah,
and you want to charge at a network B's charging station, so the two brands don't match. So your app is a different brand than the charger. You would, the two networks will need to broker that transaction through a hub. So a third party that will connect the session, and that third party will assess a fee for allowing you to charge on that B charger using the A app.
Right.
In Canada, we learn from that. And so, for example, between Flow, Shell Recharge, ChargePoint, these major networks in Canada, we have roaming agreements that remove the roaming fees.
Right. So that simplifies the transaction for somebody, because I assume they don't need to have credit card information in a bunch of different apps. It's just this one in your initial app, in your Flow app, it will transfer over when you're charging. Is that correct?
Exactly. Yeah. And there's no fees assessed, right? So you're not being penalized for doing that. And at maturity, we all know we need a lot of chargers in the field. It's not going to be only one company. And eventually things should even out, right? The number of Flow users charging on a ChargePoint charger or vice versa at a macro level should even out. So there should be no reason to charge roaming fees. And so to answer your question more directly, we are doing a better job than maybe the early days of wireless communication, mobile communication. What we learned from that, but there's still instances where there are roaming fees. I mean, there might be instances where it's still necessary to have roaming fees. For example, smaller networks who may not afford having free roaming, there might be needs there as well. But as of right now, the hope is that just to remove the friction and simplify things, everybody should be able to charge on any charger. And that's what we aspire to at Flow.
Right. Okay. So in your opinion, I mean, when we're talking about an EV, a new sales EV slowdown right now. It certainly hasn't stopped, as some pundits say. It's slowed down. You know, the two main reasons it seems to have, at least according to a lot of survey studies and industry insiders, is the price of EVs. You know, there's not a $25,000 EV out there, and the public charging network. You know, these are the reasons. Do you think that's fair to talk about how the public charging infrastructure is making people not think about an EV?
I think it's fair. I think
it is. Yeah.
The way that I would describe it is, you know, time economic slowdowns or times of uncertainty oftentimes highlight some of the problems that, or some of the concerns that pre-existed even when times were abundant or doing what the economy was doing well. And this is a great example where, as you know, the economy is slowing down because of geopolitical and other reasons, it really, I think, surfaces even more some of the issues that were present even a year or two ago, when the automotive industry was booming and growing and prices of cars were astronomically expensive for new and used. And yeah, absolutely. Even my friends and family that I recommend getting an EV, it takes a lot of education and it takes a lot of explaining and understanding their use case and trying to see if it is potentially a match, right, for their needs as a family.
Right, right. I mean, one of the you know, there's so much anecdotal stories out there about charging nightmares of, I mean, I've experienced it on drives I've done. I'm sure you've experienced it where you have in your map, or you have in your app, that, okay, there's a charging station. You go there. It might be broken. It might not even work. Or at least it's unreliable. You know, it won't give you the promised charge. Do you see a point in time where governments at different levels will step in with kind of regulation standards, inspections, much like they do for fuel, for gasoline stations? Is that something that's necessary, do you think? I mean, there are good actors and bad actors in your business. But do you see that in the future, where there will be a regulatory body overseeing public charging stations?
I think so. And it's already starting. So I do think there's a role for government entities to help improve availability, and I include reliability and availability of charging. For example, for the Inflation Reduction Act in the United States, we were strong advocates to put a minimum reliability score in order to be able to access what they call the NEVI infrastructure funds, right? Where there's incentives in the US to deploy chargers. And we encourage that in Canada as well. And I think that incentive is critically important because that's the biggest pain point in today's charging experience for an EV driver.
Right, right. And as I say, anecdotal evidence, right? At any dinner party, somebody will either tell their own story or relate someone else's. And the reality is that is a big pain point when you're used to just finding a gas station, filling up in 4 or 5 minutes and on your way, right? That's a huge society or kind of like psychology thing to break, is that whole thing. And it certainly doesn't help when you get to a charger and there's problems.
Yeah. Yeah, and we view it as a user experience pyramid, right? It's kind of like the Maslow pyramid of needs. The user experience version, you know, fundamentally needs to work, but then it has to work reliably as you move up in the pyramid, right? Then ideally, it's usable. It, not only does it have to function reliably, but the user has to be able to use it, right? Reach the carport or be able to manipulate those heavy cables in some instances, and then you move up the pyramid, right? And the complexity of charging also is that it's not just experience at the charger, but it's also experience before you reach the charger. When you're driving and you realize, oh, my battery's getting low, I need to find a place to charge, right? Then all of that experience is also, how do you find a charger? Then you pull up and sometimes you visually can't see the charger. You're like, the map says it's here, but where? Then you get close to it and you're like, oh, what do I do? Do I grab the connector first? Do I use my credit card first? Do I use my app first? That whole thing, that whole chain is quite new. And I jokingly say that the early days of EV charging was Phoebe for engineers by engineers.
Right.
So it was that. But of course, we have to design for everybody, right?
Right.
In our own research, we found out that chargers were more comfortable, today's chargers, charging and charging experience were more comfortable for men than for women. And then when we tested those heavy DC cables, we realized, wow, if you're in a wheelchair, good luck. And so we have great reliability, thankfully. I think from the beginning of the company, when Louis Tremblay founded the company in 2009, we had this big emphasis on reliability. And so generally across the network, we advertise over 98% uptime. In New York, we have over 99% uptime. And I call out New York because it's published. It's public data because it's a public funds that built that network.
Right.
But now we want to move up, right? We want to make sure minorities, women, everybody, no matter the make and model of your car, no matter what your needs are, that you can charge reliably.
Yeah, this is, I mean, we always talk about, okay, we've fulfilled all the early adopters in the EV space. Now it's kind of going after the middle group. Early adopters of anything are willing to live with issues, right? As you said, you're a tech guy and you love to experiment with new tech. I'm the same. We're a lot more patient with things, right? We're kind of like, oh, I can't back into this. Okay, I'll just turn it. Whereas, you know, if somebody just wants to buy a car, they don't want to have to think about that. They want it as seamless as possible. And that's, I guess, the next stage of EV charging is design of chargers and stations.
No, absolutely. And to your comment, Andrew, about, you know, the EV market, you know, the automotive market really as a whole also slowing down. But the interesting thing is, you know, I think Cox Automotive had published some data saying that the EV sector was on track of only growing 15% year over year in Q1.
Right.
But then if you take Tesla out of the equation, it's over 33%. Definitely more mainstream, drivers who are used to more mainstream brands are starting to jump on board. We all have to do a better job at offering better charging experiences.
So the beginning of public charging, a lot of level two stations, which aren't as quick as DC fast chargers. We're seeing DC fast chargers now come on, obviously more preferable, quicker. So many car companies now are making big voltage architecture in their battery packs. So, mm-hmm. You know, the DC fast charger is a better solution for many reasons in level two. Do you think in 10 years time, level two public chargers will be a thing of the past? I mean, will there always be a place for them, or is it just going to be, you know, too slow and just not, you know, worth taking up the space where a DC charger could be in that spot?
Yeah, great question. There will always be a spot, I think, for level two charging. And the definition of level two charging might change a little bit, but I think level two charging will always exist. And the reason why, one of the reasons why, is because DC charging is an expensive type of charging. The chargers are more expensive. There's a lot of moving parts. There's a lot of conversion of power to be able to deliver that. The construction for a site is very pricey. The equipment to connect the charger to the grid at those high powers is also expensive. And because there's moving parts in there, there's maintenance that is also required with the delivery of those high powers. I mentioned that level two, the definition would be like maybe charge 8 hours plus to charge full, let's say, at level two. Today, that's sort of there's a big void between like DC fast charging and level two charging, which you have to charge overnight. But in the future, there will be these sort of in between lower power DC chargers that could also appear. That is not quite as fast as DC fast charging, but is also not as expensive to operate, but is still faster than charging 8 hours. And so this is where destination charging, for example, for retail, if you're going to a shopping mall or you're doing a 1 hour grocery somewhere, you can charge your car nearly to full. And so I think in the future, ideally, we have a range of charging options that people become familiar. Because, to give an example, in Texas, there's not a lot of DC charging. So I end up having to go to a DC charger in the city in Dallas.
Right, yes.
When my hotel could have had one, or the convention
Right.
center could have had level two charging, which would be much cheaper, much more affordable, and frankly easier for the utility to deliver the power. But people use DC just because that's the only thing available. So the more level two charging is available at home in your multi-unit residential, at work, where your kids might go do sports, play sports, or doing other extracurricular activities, the less is a need for DC fast charging. And I think that's we're making a shift larger for sustainability. And so level two is by far the most sustainable way of charging a vehicle.
Okay, let's take a break here and we'll be back with Nathan to talk about more about Flow and the company he works for. We'll be right back.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And we're back with Nathan Yang from Flow. So let's talk about Flow. You mentioned 2019 just celebrated 15-year anniversary in the EV space. That's a lifetime. That's early adoption for sure. Many listeners, particularly if they own an electric vehicle, will know Flow from the many public chargers the company operates across America. But Flow does a lot more than that in the charging space, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, we the two big market segments that we serve is residential and public charging. And as we mentioned earlier, public charging is split between level two and DC. But at home charging is where, just using a general number, more than 80% of charging happens, right? For most of your daily commute, driving to home, driving to work, driving to school, the dozens of miles you might do per day, level two charging at home is the most affordable and the most convenient way to charge. And for my family and friends who've never driven an EV, I tell them, imagine every morning you wake up and you drive out with a full tank of gas, right? You never need to go to a gas station. And that's actually, it's funny, as we did some I encourage my team, being a product and design person, to do a lot of primary research, really understand the underlying needs that our customers have so we can serve those customers in the best possible way. And we found out that especially people who identify as women, or people who might have that type of preference, actually, in terms of a peace of mind, love the idea of an EV because they don't need to charge at a gas station anymore. Every morning they leave with a full tank of gas. They feel, and there's less things that could break in an EV as well from an engine perspective. So they have this, they feel this sense of peace of mind after driving an EV for a certain amount of time that, you know, they can never go back to a combustion engine.
So, I mean, as a company, you kind of are always, you know, looking to the future, planning ahead, such a difficult business in many ways to plan ahead for. But I mean, will you always be in the public and the private charging space? I mean, is that the business model for you guys, is to have still continue rolling out public charging stations, but also still have this robust home charging network option for people?
Yeah, because the same charger, we want to meet all their charging needs, either to our own chargers or even, as I mentioned earlier, through roaming with third party chargers. We want to simplify that experience, whichever way we can do so. And like I mentioned, give them the peace of mind, right? So the same way that on a public charger, we ensure high reliability and safety to protect the vehicle, the user, and even the grid, and we don't want to bring down the grid either. We do the same thing at home. And I don't know if you saw that there's some early days of residential charging where the NEMA 1450 receptacle, where you connect your EV charger to, sometimes they melt, which is kind of scary when you look at that. And that's because that, you know, there's many reasons, but the primary reason is because a lot of times those receptacles are designed for a dryer, for example, and you only plug it once and you leave it there. They're not made for plugging and unplugging. And so eventually the connectors get loose, and because the contact is not as good, it overheats and you have these things. So we went out of the way, for example, to put temperature sensors at both the vehicle connector and also at the connector that connects to your house. And people sometimes don't see that, but you're connecting your two most expensive assets of your family together. Right. And so you kind of want to make sure that, you know, the car's giving you peace of mind. Well, you have to charge it in a way also that gives you peace of mind. And so that idea of reliability and delivering the best experience carries from home to public. And, you know, for foreseeable future, we will continue to play in those two key market segments.
I'm curious how Flow or any public charging company goes about selecting a space for a new public charging station. Obviously, there are businesses you guys align with, like shopping malls and things like that, hotels, as you mentioned. But there are some that are more just kind of like in public space almost. Is it like a grid that you lay out and go, okay, there's not one here, we should be here, or how does that work?
Yeah, in an ideal world, this maybe is how you describe it. We draw a grid and we're like, oh, this is a good place to put it. I had the luxury of working in many different industries: telecommunication, home security, automation, fleet management software, and now at Flow. And this is by far the most complex industry that I've been in, because, you know, to select the site, you have to work with the site hosts. And to your point, it could be hospitality, like a hotel. It could be, a government entity because it's on a highway next to a large highway. It could also be, any range of. So you have site hosts that you have to consider. Then you have the utility. Not everywhere has the level of power needed to be able to connect a DC fast charger, for example, to offer the level of power. And you can't say, well, we can only offer high power at these times of day. If you're a DC charging station between two major cities, you have to have that full power available at all times, because people can show up at any time and charge. And so then you have to make sure that the utility has the power to be able to power that. And then we use other sources of data to try to look at traffic patterns and others to try to help us, triangulate. But then when you put it all together, that means that there's a lot of things that have to happen well before you can actually deploy the charger. So the short answer is many factors and many entities have to align in order to be able to deploy a charger at a particular location. And the more complex answer is then there's the construction planning, and then it's a pretty complex process.
Yeah, I just think of, Canada is a little simpler when it comes to the power utilities because they tend to be provincial entities. But in the States, you've got so many.
Exactly.
To have relationships with all those companies across North America must be in itself a huge challenge for your team.
I tell my Canadian families and friends and colleagues that you don't realize the luxury you have in Canada on the power front until you move to Texas, right?
Yeah, well, Texas in particular of late, there's some history there of showing that the downside of competing companies, I suppose.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So you mentioned Tesla earlier. We are all going to be seeing Tesla stations open up to all brands. Their NACS charging system is kind of being acknowledged as it's going to be the standard going forward. How do you guys prepare for that? Is that a big impact for you, or is it more just worrying about the cars themselves will come with adapters and the owner will figure it out?
We have been pestering Tesla to open that connector standard for a long time. So,
As have many people.
suddenly, things turned positive, and we're like, "Well, what changed?" And then, of course, we heard the news that Mary Barra, supported the idea of having GM vehicles charge at superchargers, and that's where the sort of the cascading effect of multiple OEMs go jumping on board and enabling charging sessions on the supercharger network. The important thing I think that a lot of people don't realize is that the NACS technology, it's really the tip of the connector. It's the mechanical geometry of the tip of the connector. And Tesla, for a long time already, has implemented the communication protocol to be the same as CCS combo. So it really is just a form factor change. And then SAE, to their credit, they very quickly develop a true standard, which is the J3400 standard. And because Tesla only charges up, as a 400 volt architecture versus other EVs that might charge at a 800,000 volt architecture, that we needed to make sure that that mechanical form factor of the tip of the connector worked not only for Tesla at the 400 volt architecture, but also worked at the 800,000 volt architecture. So there are some modifications that SAE did, is a society of automotive engineers, for those who don't know, who create a lot of the standards in the automotive industry in North America. So J3400 is there. We are very active in supporting that. And the new residential chargers that we just announced, like the X3, X6, and X8, which goes all the way up to 80 amps, they do support the J3400, also known as NACS. They're backwards compatible, also known as quote unquote the Tesla connector.
So more just a hardware switch for you guys. It's not going to be a big.
It is a hardware switch, but it is also for us is a po we think is a positive thing to the industry. The make and model of vehicle that's most charged that charges the most on our network are of course Teslas.
Yes, right.
Right?
Well,
It's a very symbiotic relationship.
it is the beta VHS discussion, right? And it just makes things, as you said. The roaming analogy, that's getting sorted out, and now this has been the different plugs have been sorted out, so we're all moving in the same direction of making things simpler.
And there will be a messy period, and for better or for worse, the messy period will be long because vehicles tend to last, 5 to 10 years. I went to a trade show in Sacramento about EVs. The name is escaping me right now, but I saw a guy with a T-shirt that says "Chatamo won't die" on the T-shirt. And he's not wrong, right? Even today, we still
It's
offer
got to be
charge
around.
for the Nissan Leafs and some of the Mitsubishi plug-in hybrids. But yeah, there will be a messy period. There will be a period where we will be highly reliant on adapters. But the hope is that my son, who's 8, and the future generations, they will no longer have to deal with that moving forward, or maybe they won't even have to deal with a connector at all. So.
Yeah, well, it's a great old story. When you're a granddad, you can tell your grandchildren about all these different adapters we had. You kids have it so easy today.
Yep, that's right.
Okay. So last question for you. So as a company for Flow, is there a singular big challenge facing the company, or are there many challenges? I mean, what do you guys, when you have your team retreats and things, is there one thing that you focus on, or is there many things?
There's really two things that we focus on, is getting more chargers out there and make sure that we deliver the best possible experience. And that has been driving, you know, our mission is really to help address global warming by driving EV adoption. And we do so by delivering the best charging experience. And we live by that every day. We're lucky to have a group of very passionate employees here at Flow. You know, I feel the privilege of, you know, I've worked in many industries, and in the past industries, sustainability was not always the forefront of things. There would be a side of sustainability, but the main business was still, you know, sell more product to generate more revenue, right? Regardless if it's good or not good for the environment. And at Flow, I can genuinely say that that's not the lens that we take, right? We take the lens of, I heard a story of an employee that joined us at some point, but he was formerly a supplier, and he was shocked that we would ask for exceedingly high MTBF numbers for hardware components. And for those of you who don't know, like, MTBF is the mean time before failure, so it's a rating of how many cycles before it breaks of something. And he was surprised about how every component that we use, we require these really high thresholds of reliability and longevity. And so we, of course, we have to be financially and economically sustainable as a business to be able to realize our mission. But really, at the core, we're really passionate for driving EV adoption and delivering that best possible experience.
Okay, well, thanks, Nathan. Very interesting discussion. I learned a lot, which is to me always a good sign of a podcast episode. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me, Andrew.
Nathan Yang is the Chief Product Officer for Flow, and as he mentioned, it's a company with the mission statement to help overcome climate change and accelerate the adoption of electric vehicles by offering the best EV charging experience. Charging continues to be one of the most challenging aspects of the electric vehicle revolution, not just from an individual EV owner's perspective, but also in terms of bringing EV adoption to the masses. Simply put, if we build them, they will buy. That's it for today's episode. If you're a longtime listener, maybe even dating back to that first episode in the fall of 2019, I humbly thank you for the support. And if you're new to the Plugged In podcast, I truly appreciate your interest and hope today's talk with Nathan Yang will have you coming back for more. And as always, a big thank you to my producer, Adam Foster. Be sure to subscribe to Plugged In wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. That way you'll never miss an episode, and you'll also be able to listen to past episodes, including that first one with Jerry Kroll from Electromechanica. And be sure to check out the Motormouth podcast, which comes back for its third season next Friday, May 10th. In that episode, David Booth, aka Motormouth, looks back on his 4-decade-long career as one of North America's preeminent automotive journalists. It's worth a listen. For your dose of all things automotive, including up-to-date information on new EVs in Canada, be sure to check out driving.ca, where you'll find the best in breaking news, videos, and reviews. Thanks as always for listening, and look out for the next Plugged In episode on May 16th.